Week 4, for what we thought was going to be a boring slate, actually ended up being one of the best weeks yet. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the TBD College Football Show, your go-to for everything college football. I'm Mason, your host, here by myself tonight to talk you through Week 4. It is currently Tuesday, September 23rd, 2025. We are coming off an incredible Week 4 slate. Before we jump into it, though, I want to start by saying that the tagline to our show, which of course is, no matter what team you pull for, if you're on God's side, you're always on the winning team, rings true in our day and age, especially if your team lost this past Saturday. We want you to know there's a man who's never lost a battle, and his name is Jesus. And if you're needing a win, he defeated death and sin for you, and you can accept that. And we recommend that you do. It's one of the most important things. It is in the values of TBD CFB, and we want you to know that Jesus loves you and he can save you if you allow him to. If you have any more questions about that, you can always reach out to us on our Instagram at TBD CFB, TikTok at the same handle, or right here in the comments of this YouTube video. So let's jump into it. First, our pick records. Joey, he is still in first, third week in a row, after going 2-2 in week 4 at 17-13. We finally break the tie for second place as Isaac goes 2-2, and he is now 15-15, and I went 1-3, and I'm in third place at 14-16. We've got a lot of good games this coming week. We're going to pick those on Thursday, come back then for the monster slate, but we're getting too far ahead of ourselves. Let's jump in, week 4 review. This first game, this is a game we didn't even pick because it wasn't a ranked matchup, and we honestly thought that it was going to be not a great game. Thought this team was going to handle business at home after starting the season 1-2, and they did not. Of course, we are talking about Clemson-Syracuse. Clemson didn't even cover, but to be fair, the spread was 17.5. What in the world is Vegas thinking putting Clemson at 17.5? I understand that Syracuse did not have some great wins to start the season, and they started with a loss against Tennessee and Atlanta, but still, 17.5 was so much. I took Syracuse plus the points. Thank you, Josh Pate. And I won that bet. I just knew that was going to be way too big of a spread for Clemson at home. Dabo Swinney, he's off to the worst start of his career, 1-3. Clemson, they just looked unprepared. They did not play well. I'll get into this. I think offensively, they did play pretty well. Defensively, they did not. Antonio Brown being back definitely helped Klubnik. He looked a lot more comfortable, had a little bit of a safety blanket, but he still didn't do much. 5 receptions for 49 yards. Clemson, they lose the turnover battle. 1 fumble, 1 interception. That 1 fumble, of course, being Adam Randall, if you didn't know, they took Adam Randall at wide receiver. He wanted the transfer out. Dabo convinces him to come back but play at running back. And this is what we've been calling the Adam Randall experiment. At running back specifically, this is not going that great. Even if you look at the stats, it's like 130 yards in this game, which is an improvement. It seems like he's gotten better and better each week. This is probably not the long-term answer, especially for this season. He did have a touchdown catch in this game, however, so his wide receiver days coming back into play a little bit, using that, looked pretty good there, but at running back, Clemson, they also lost the penalty battle. They went 8 penalties for 75 yards, most of them being false starts at home. And in the second half, the stadium emptied, one, because they're down by 3 possessions, but also because there was a massive rain delay at halftime. It's difficult to say how this happened, but I don't understand why there were so many false starts in this game by Clemson. It's like the stadium pulse in NCAA 25 was at max capacity with half your stadium gone, quiet, at home. They're just undisciplined. It was just undisciplined. So many of those false starts. Syracuse, they played extremely well. Everything that Clemson did not do well, they did it way better and more, and they did it on the road. Death Valley, it once was a place that was like scary to have to go to, but this past Saturday, it just wasn't. I don't want to say it's not anymore, but this past Saturday, it was not a great atmosphere. 0 turnovers, less penalties, smart decisions. They ran the ball well. The defense matched up well. Everything, they just did it well. Angeli, unfortunately, he got hurt midway through the third quarter. He finished up with 18 for 31, 244 passing yards, and 2 touchdowns. He just lit them up. This is where the unfortunately part comes in. He did tear his Achilles He's out for the season, and he's going to have surgery on that. Not sure if that has already happened or if it's going to, but he will have to, and that will be the end for the Syracuse quarterback. However, their backup quarterback actually played well. He threw for a touchdown pass after he left the game against Clemson. So, not really sure. I know Fran Brown's a good head coach. I know he develops well. He's from the Georgia system, so duh. However, we'll see what happens there. Back to Clemson just for a second. We know Clemson has the talent. Their wide receiver core is so good. Antonio Williams, Bryant Wesco, TJ Moore, they've got good guys. And Klubnik, he can, keyword there, can make big plays. We've seen him do it against LSU. Look at the Pitt game last year where he finished it with a like 45-yard touchdown run to put them ahead and not lose on the road again. But it's the turnovers that give him issues. He threw one late in this game. The play calling was bad in this game, especially late, trying to come back. Screen, right up the middle screen. It's just very vanilla play calling. I'm not really sure what the deal is with Garrett Riley. I know that Joey has complained about this a lot on the show. But to me, the biggest thing in this game was, and I mentioned this, was their defense. Their secondary got thrown all over the entire game. They could not stop the pass. Their highly touted defensive line, they did create some pressure, but even when they did create pressure, they couldn't get to the quarterback, and Steve Angeli was still able to stand in and make throws. Their backup was still able to stand in and make throws. There was this preseason expectation that you'd have this Heisman contender quarterback and this stellar returning defense, full of returning starters, that were going to come in, probably have some guys go to the league, and just play lights out, get them back in the playoff conversation. They lost three games already. It just seems stale. It seems stagnant. It just seems like there's nothing exciting there right now. And it's not like they don't want it. They do want it. But it's just not, there's just something not there. And maybe it's Dabo refusing to get with the times. Maybe it's Garrett Riley in the play calling. Who knows? But this is where Clemson is now. They gave up 435 yards against Syracuse. And it's easy to do transitive property here and say, well, Syracuse almost lost to UConn, so Clemson must really be terrible. Sometimes that is the case. I don't think that's the case here. I think that's just college football. And I think really what it was is that Syracuse came into play, caught him off guard, especially, you know, go right down the field, score a touchdown, get an onside kick, go right down the field again, have to settle for three. But then it never felt like Clemson was in control. It always felt like Syracuse had it and they were not letting it slip. Even when they got back within 10, it never felt like Syracuse was letting this one slip away. They felt in control the entire time. All the credit in the world to Syracuse and Fran Brown. They played a great game, and now they go and they play another team, and we'll see what happens with the rest of their season. Oklahoma versus Auburn. This is the next game we're going to talk about. There was some controversies with this game. We'll get there in a second. However, I want to start with where I was wrong and where I was right. So the first and biggest thing that I said that was wrong last week is I said that Auburn was going to have the better special teams. They did not have the better special teams. They missed a field goal, so went 50-50 on field goals, missed one, made one. Had a terrible, it wasn't a muffed punt, but it was like the punter fumbled the ball away, put them being Oklahoma, in great field position where they end up scoring. They did not or were not able to return punts and kickoffs well at all. Oklahoma special teams unit was all over them. They played a really good game. They're very good. Where Baylor failed against Auburn, OU succeeded. And this is something that this is where I get to be correct. I said that they were not going to be able to play the same game that they did against Baylor, because Baylor's defense is nowhere near as good as Oklahoma's. OU defense is elite. 10 sacks and one for a safety to let OU cover the spread. I did not bet on this game, but I know people that did, and I know people were very happy that that safety occurred. For those that bet over 6.5 for Oklahoma, they got it. Jackson Arnold, he loves to run more than he throws. I said this last week. I said that it's not like Gunnar Stockton, right, where he's young and when his wide receiver one that he wants to throw to is not open, he just takes off. We know that's not really the case anymore because we've seen him do it. However, that was early Gunnar Stockton. That's not Jackson Arnold's MO at all. Jackson Arnold loves to just run the ball because it's in his nature. It's what he does. He does not like to throw. Now, I will say, I'll give him credit. He did throw a lot of deep passes in this game, and the stats will reflect. I think it was like 230 passing yards. he threw the ball. He got them in to scoring position several times, and they just weren't able to capitalize, but he did throw the ball. However, most of those 10 sacks were not Oklahoma. I'm not taking away from Oklahoma's defense. They're extremely elite. They play at a very high level. But you've got guys wide open in the flat. You could have thrown a screen here. You could have hit the guy on the slant, and yet you just stand there forever. Props to the Auburn O-line, by the way. They played great. They gave him plenty of time to make plays, and Jackson Arnold just stood in the pocket and did nothing. Just looked. And then when finally they had to let them through and got pressured, he just tried to run and got swallowed up. That's literally what happened. Probably like 7 of those 10 sacks are on Jackson Arnold for not getting rid of the football. I think that Arnold's performance against OU was literally just copy-paste from the Baylor game. The only difference is that OU's defense is like 3 tiers up, like I mentioned. All the credit in the world to them, but Arnold had a lot of chances to pass and he just would not take them. Now, don't even get me started on the officiating. I don't really want to get too deep into it. I just know that it was definitely one of the worst officiated games I've ever seen in my life. Missed calls on both sides, and it really seems like there was just no consistency for any of the flags they threw. You got the ghost substitution for a touchdown, which has been heavily argued and is a extreme point of controversy this week. Horse collar tackles. There was one that they called on Jackson Arnold early in the game. Auburn did the same thing to Oklahoma. It didn't get called. Even pass interference calls that, I mean, wide open on both sides that they just missed. I mean, if I can find the video, I'll put it right here. But it's just terrible. Just terrible. I don't want to say that it 100% affected the outcome of the game, but it was still definitely some of the worst officiating I've seen from the SEC crew. And a lot of people ask, like, well, you know, like, what do we do to fix this? Because it's almost like these things happen, like whatever conference releases a statement later after the game's already over, and then there's just nothing that can be done. We don't really know anything about how they handle that back door. My opinion is that I think that refs should not have, that there should be no refs by conference. Get rid of conference refs. Let's have NCAA refs, okay? That way, everything across the board is the same. They call the same. There's no emphasis on one thing in another conference versus another conference. There is nothing like that. Just make the NCAA refs, not conference refs. Get rid of that. I think that that would fix so many issues in our game, because our games are important for coaches and their livelihoods, for the players who love it, the students who have a big time sense of admiration and pride in their universities, for fans that are betting on these games, and you got refs that are blowing these calls, just awful. And you're affecting all of these things. And then when we get mad about it, we get penalized. Our coaches, for speaking out about something that happens, they get penalized. It's terrible. That's just one man's opinion who doesn't really have any football experience and is just a lover of the game and loves to watch college football and talk about it. However, that's what I would do. Just standardize reffing. Like, make it NCAA refs, not conference refs. That's what I would do. John Mateer, while he had some issues, is still a dog. 271 pass yards, 29 rush yards, 1 pass touchdown, 1 rush touchdown. Mateer played extremely well against a really good Auburn defense. Auburn played well defensively. They stopped the quarterback run like they did against Baylor, but they still couldn't quite stop Mateer and his receivers like Deion Burks and Satania. They all played extremely well, but truly, it never felt like the game, again, this is kind of like I said with Syracuse over Clemson, but it never felt like the game was out of OU's control. Even when they took a 1-point lead, Auburn came back, it's 17-16. It still felt like, okay, Oklahoma's at home. They're just going to go right down the field, use the guys and the talent that they have. Their offensive line is playing well. John Mateer is a dog. They have great receivers. They have great running backs. They just went right down the field and scored a touchdown. They didn't get the 2-point conversion, but they ended up getting the 2 points later on that safety. So things are still shaping up for both teams. Obviously, still early in the season. I mean, we could still see Auburn in the playoffs. You still technically see Auburn in Atlanta. I think, though, you will probably see OU in Atlanta, just like with the way things are looking right now. They definitely could make a run. And if they can get the small things figured out, like it's really like they just play football like they've got nothing to lose, which at some points is good, but they're turning the ball over. You know, I think they turned the ball over in like the last 3 games that they've played. They just got to clean those little things up, and they're going to be solid. Auburn, however, I think it is back to the drawing board, especially going on the road again to the home of the 12th man this Saturday. But we're going to talk more about that on Thursday. Oh boy, South Carolina at Missouri. For those of you who don't know, my wife is a Carolina fan, so that kind of makes me a Carolina fan, even though I'm a Georgia fan. So I do pull for the Gamecocks whenever they're not playing Georgia. Feels like the season is slipping away for Shane Beamer and the Gamecocks. I do not think that Shane Beamer is on the hot seat, though. I've heard a lot of people say that. He's like the best thing that's been in Columbia since Spurrier left. He's reignited the culture at South Carolina. I mean, you start 6-6, you go 8-5 the next year, you deal with a ton of injuries, go 5-7. Last year, one game away from making the playoffs. I mean, they don't lose at LSU. They don't lose against Alabama. You know, they get pounded into the ground by Ole Miss, sure. So if they don't lose against Alabama or LSU, then they're most likely in the playoffs. You start out this year, you lose some guys to the draft, so your defense isn't as strong, but you're still pretty hyped up. It just feels like there was a lot of preseason expectations, and they have not lived up to them. Lenore Sellers, I feel like, has. I think that with how close the Missouri game was, that they probably could have beat Vanderbilt had Lenore stayed in the game. But their defense is definitely having some issues. It's hard to win a game when you finish with -9 rushing yards. And to be fair, a lot of that is because Sellers would drop back to pass. His O-line, which played terribly, by the way, would let all the defenders through, and then he would have to try to run, and he would get sacked. The big passes from Sellers being clutch is basically what kept this game so close and what kept South Carolina in the game and made it a game at all. The O-line, like I said, could not block. Defense could not stop the run from Missouri. They just could not get off the field. Here's the turning point in this game. South Carolina is down 20-26. They've got 5.5 minutes left in the game. It's 4th-and-9. South Carolina, they opt to punt and put their trust in a defense that had already given up over 225 yards on the ground already that game. And well, Mizzou did exactly what you thought they would. They'd run all over Carolina on that final drive to go down to the field goal range. They'd get 3 points to go up 29-20, and that's basically all she wrote. Now, obviously, if South Carolina doesn't, if they go for it on 4th-and-9 and don't get it, the game's basically over anyway. But I think that it would have been better to put your trust in the offense and in Sellers, who had been playing really well and making plays and being clutch like he is, because he's their entire offense right now. I mean, I mentioned the thing about him getting sacked, but their running backs didn't play all that well either. But it was an offense that had kept you in the game when Missouri had kept scoring at will. So all this to say, I didn't think me picking South Carolina was a bad pick necessarily, especially with Sellers playing. But man, Mizzou is just a good football team. Ahmad Hardy, the running back, 138 yards, one touchdown. Bo Prabula, 171 yards, one touchdown. Oh, and South Carolina versus themselves was also an issue. 14 for 98 penalties. So many ridiculous penalties. And this was not like OU Auburn. This was not ridiculous refs. This was just South Carolina doing it to themselves. Just undisciplined play on the road. When you go on the road, that's the one thing you got to be is disciplined in the SEC, especially in this conference. It's difficult to play on the road in this conference. This was still a closer game than people anticipated. A lot of people thought that it was going to be a blowout. I knew it wouldn't be. I did take SC plus the points. It was like a 9.5-point spread. I took them because I thought it was going to be closer, and I won that bet. But for what was hyped up to be one of the SEC frontrunners, South Carolina, they definitely have some things to look at. Texas Tech versus Utah. This is an interesting one because the final score indicates that Texas Tech just had their way with Utah, and that just is not the case. This was a much more defensive game than the final score showed. After an early touchdown by Texas Tech, there would not be another score until under 2 minutes in the second quarter. But there would be 3.5 turnovers in the first quarter. I say half because Utah forced one out. They forced a fumble on one of Baron Morton's throws. It was recovered by Texas Tech, though, but it was could have been a turnover. And 5 total turnovers in the half. 2 interceptions by Texas Tech. Utah, they fumbled twice, and they got 1 interception. There wouldn't be another score until 12.5 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and it was just a Texas Tech field goal to go up 13-3. Utah, they would respond right back with a touchdown to make it 13-10, but of course we know that Texas Tech would score 2 more touchdowns, basically in garbage time, to finish off 27-10. I think there's a lot of credit to be given here to both teams. Obviously, Tech was able to finish. Utah was not. But Utah defensively, they still have an edge if they can get their offense going. Texas Tech is definitely the better team. Morton, he goes out in the third quarter. Hammond comes in to finish off the Utes, ending with 169 pass yards and 2 touchdowns in just a quarter and a half. Truly, I don't think that Utah should have been dropped from the rankings, mainly because Texas Tech is a really good team, and Utah played them pretty close for most of the game. But Texas Tech is possibly the best team in the Big 12 right now. There's a conversation for Iowa State, It'll be interesting to see what happens when we get to the end of the road. But right now, I think that that is the best team in the Big 12, Texas Tech. But that's just the way it goes. Utah will have to fight to get back into the conversation. But I think that they can do it. I think that they're still a really good team. I think they've got a lot going for them. Kyle Whittingham is an experienced head coach. I don't see Utah going anywhere, especially if they can fix their offensive inconsistencies. But also, Texas Tech just has a really good defense. So we'll see what happens. Okay, this game. Illinois versus Indiana. Before we get into it, I want you all to know that we all picked Illinois. Every single one of us. Me, Joey, and Isaac, we all picked Illinois. And boy, were we dead wrong. Wow. I feel like both of these teams fooled us. Illinois, they got a big win over Duke. It was probably closer than the final score indicated with Illinois scoring a couple late touchdowns. At the time, that looked like a big win, and then Duke continued to struggle. They lost to Tulane. But Indiana, I feel like they fooled us because they kind of flew under the radar for a little bit. They played two Group of Five schools and FCS Indiana State to start the season. And it just felt like they hadn't been battle tested, which is one of the main reasons that we all picked Illinois. Well, here comes number 9, Illinois, who I feel like definitely should have been dropped from the rankings after this, but that's another story. And they got absolutely boat raced. It wasn't even a boat race. It was just demolished on every level, 63-10. What? If I would have told you, like, hey, Indiana beat a school 63-10, you would have said, oh, who was it? Wake Forest or Western Kentucky or Sam Houston? No, it was Illinois. You would be like, what? A Big Ten school versus another Big Ten school who looked like both pretty good programs. And Indiana just knocked them out in the first round, 63-10. Illinois never stood a chance. I mean, Indiana just fired at will. They did whatever they wanted to. They ran the ball. They got turnovers on defense. They passed the ball. It was just like Illinois didn't even show up. It was like they just showed up with some high school team from down the road in Champaign is what it looked like. It was insane. I've never seen something like that. Like, if you came to me last week and said, hey, Indiana's going to beat Illinois 62-10, I would have said, you are crazy. Illinois just had no answer, man. Indiana, 579 total yards. Illinois, 161 total yards. Nothing. Nothing. So now we have a dilemma with Indiana. The answer for Illinois was pretty obvious after that, but with Indiana, are they the number one team in the Big Ten, or is Illinois just that bad? So we know Illinois is bad. We know that. But, I mean, Indiana, they backed themselves up with how they played more this Saturday. I don't know. Indiana, they have 3-1 Iowa this Saturday. They have Oregon the next week. Do we see a repeat here? I promise you we'll have an answer to that question real quick. We'll see how they do. They got to play Iowa. Got to play Oregon. They got to play Penn State. We'll see. So those are the biggest games from week 4. We posted our TBD Top 15 on TikTok. It got mixed responses. So I want to help try to clear that up. Number 15, and I want to clear up this too. We do a Top 15 because 25 teams is just a lot. There's just not a point. But also 15, literally just because we want to try to be a little bit different. So TBD Top 15, number 15, Georgia Tech. They're undefeated, but that Clemson win is looking less and less impressive. I do think that Georgia Tech's a top 15, and a lot of these teams are ranked because they have done something, right? It's not just based on eye test, or because they play in a good conference, or because of who they are, who their brand is. It's because they've done something. Vanderbilt, number 14, undefeated, big win over South Carolina, but I want them to continue the streak. I want to see them keep going, but they've done a lot already, but they look good. 70, they dropped a 70 burger on Georgia State this past week. Alabama better watch out. Number 13, Texas. I got some heat for this, but what has Texas done to be in the top 10? They lost to Ohio State. They've struggled against teams like UTEP and San Jose State at home. They destroyed Sam Houston State 55-0 this past Saturday, but it's Sam Houston State. And so my question is, what have they done? They look good. I'll give them that. Like, they've got good guys on their roster and they've got a really good head coach. But besides that, what have they done? Number 12, Tennessee. They have one loss to Georgia, but they looked extremely impressive. They have outscored their opponents by a lot, except for Georgia. They should have beat Georgia, but they couldn't come up in the clutch when it mattered with a field goal and in overtime. You don't mess with the dogs. They're resilient. It's what they do. That's why I've got them at 12. I'm sure they'll move up as the season goes on, because I expect big things from Tennessee, even as a Georgia fan. Number 11, Texas Tech. Big win over Utah. Keep proving it. Keep going. Show me you're the best team. Show me you get in top 10. Top 10, Penn State. And honestly, Penn State should probably be lower than 10. Eye test. They get a chance to prove it this week against Oregon, though. They do. Number 9, Indiana. Ridiculously huge win over Illinois. Ridiculously big win. Like I said, that question is going to get answered. Are they really that good? Or is Illinois that bad? And they play Iowa and Oregon. There's their next two games, and we're definitely going to find out. Number 8, Oklahoma. Big wins over Michigan and Auburn. They look really good on both sides of the ball. They're extremely balanced right now. That's why I think that they're at 8. Number 7, Texas A&M. Big road win over Notre Dame. That's why they're there. Number 6, LSU. Should probably be lower, but they're undefeated. They got a big road win against Clemson, which is starting to look less impressive. I'll give you that. But their defense is still stellar. Their defense is lights out better than last year. So that's why I got them at 6. Number 5, Oregon. It's Oregon. They look stupid good. Number 4, FSU. Ranked win against an Alabama team that is starting to improve and look really good. Number 3, Georgia. Insane win over Tennessee. Team looks pretty balanced. And Gunnar Stockton proved himself. There's not a lot of questions there. And there's not really a lot of questions about this team. Number 2, Ohio State. Let me explain. Their biggest win is over Texas. And they've looked less impressive than they did initially, but they're still a good team, but they're a young team. Number 1, Miami. 2 AP top 25 wins, plus a big win over in-state rival Florida. They look like the most balanced team in the country. They look really good. Just studs on the offense. They got Carson Beck at quarterback, studs on the defense. They're just playing really good ball right now. So that's why I would have Miami at 1. Rankings are right here in this graphic. If you disagree, let us know. It is what it is. But thank y'all for listening. This week 5 slate is an absolute monster this coming Saturday. You won't want to miss our episode this Thursday, where we preview and predict the biggest games of week 5. So come back on Thursday, monster slate. If you're getting dragged to a fall wedding this Saturday, I feel really bad for you, son. I really do. Anyway, always remember, no matter what team you pull for, if you're on God's side, you're always on the winning team. Just know that there is a Father in heaven who loves you and wants to have a relationship with you. Just know that we are all sinners. We've all done wrong, and that's what separates us from God. Jesus, he bridged the gap between us and God. He created a way for us to be reconciled to our Heavenly Father who loves us. And all you have to do to be saved is just believe in him, call on his name, confess him with your mouth, and believe in your heart that he is Lord and that he was raised on the third day. If you have any more questions about that, you can always reach out to us on TikTok or Instagram at TBDCFB, or you can hit us up right here in the comments. We'd love to have a conversation with you. We're praying for our listeners, and we appreciate you guys listening. Hey, if you like the video, share the video, subscribe. That would be awesome. Hit the bell for notifications. We post stuff all the time. Hit up our comment section. Leave a comment on this YouTube video. Tell us if we're crazy. Tell me if you think I'm wrong about some things. We want to talk. We want to hear from you, all right? And go check out our socials, like I just mentioned, at TBDCFB on Instagram and TikTok. We post a ton of fun and awesome content over there that you're sure to love if you love college football. I'm Mason. We'll see you on Thursday to talk about the Week 5 slate and make all of our previews and predictions. Bye-bye.